Ananda, all glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shishi Guru Ranga, all glories to His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Namo Vishnu Vaya Krishna. Okay. Since this is the beginning of the Chaitanya Charitamrita season, the Gaur Purnima season is... This is the official advent of the Gaur Purnima festival season with the appearance day of Dvaita Acharya. So we'll chant this little tune. You all know it. We'll just do it for a couple minutes. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. I'm not reading yet. Oh, I'm going to read all over the place. You know the internet. I mean, you can go anywhere. You can go up. You can go down. Depends. Prabhupada said it's like a surgeon's scalpel, material energy. You can use it to cut out cancer or cut out some tumor or disease, or you can use it to cut somebody's throat. So the internet, you can use it to go to the highest of the highest, to the spiritual world, or you can go straight to hell, or the lowest of the low, if you want to go there as well. So... just depends on the consciousness with which you use these things. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to, there's a verse, 612, Adi Leela 612, which is a very nice verse glorifying Sri Adwaita. And read the purport, and if you can all follow along in the Bengali, we can do that also. It's not very hard. I won't go real fast. And then I'm going to do a little biographical information, transcendental trivia pursuit from different places that I looked at. And we'll take it from there. There's a lot of verses glorifying Sri Adwaita, especially in the Adi Leela 6th chapter. There's like pages and pages of these verses, but whether we get that far, I don't know. But I would like to do this one verse from Prabhupada, and it's Adi Leela 612. Those of you who are connected to with your iPads or your iPhones or whatever other technological miracles you have at your disposal. So it's Chapter 6, verse 12, and I'll, it's, like I say, it's not too hard to follow along, even without the board. Jagat, Mangala, Adwaita, Mangala, Guna, Dhamma, Mangala, Charita, Sada, Mangala, Yanra, Nama, Jagat Mangala Adwaita. Jagat Mangala Adwaita. Mangala Guna Dhamma. Mangala Guna Dhamma. Mangala Charitra Sada. Mangala Charitra Sada. Mangala Yanra Nama. The Bengali is a little different beat or rhythm, which I'm not too conversant with or very good at, so just, you know, tolerate it. And in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada, when he first published the Bhagavatams, he said, in one purport, he said, please forgive my grammar, because my English is not very good, and try to understand the essence of what I'm saying or what Krishna is saying. So I'm not in that league, of course, but anyway, not a Bengali expert. Jagat Mangala Adwaita Mangala Gunadama Mangala Charita Sada Mangala Yanranama. Anybody have it on their iPad that want to do it the right way? No? Okay. All right, translation. Enough of the scholarly stuff. Being a reservoir of all auspicious attributes, Sri Advaita Acharya is all auspicious to the world. His characteristics, activities, and name are always auspicious. Please repeat. Being a reservoir of all auspicious attributes, Sri Advaita Acharya is all auspicious for the world. His characteristics, activities, and name are always auspicious. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Sri Advaita Prabhu, who is an incarnation of Mahavishnu, is an acharya or teacher. All his activities and all other activities of Vishnu are auspicious. Anyone who can view the all auspiciousness in the pastimes of Lord Vishnu also becomes auspicious simultaneously. Therefore, since Lord Vishnu is the fountainhead of auspiciousness, anyone who is attracted by the devotional service of Lord Vishnu can render the greatest service to human society. Rejected persons of the material world who refuse to understand pure devotional service as the eternal function of the living entities and as actual liberation of the living being from conditioned life become bereft of all devotional service because of their poor fund of knowledge. In the teachings of Advaita Prabhu, there is no question of fruitive activities or impersonal liberation. Bewildered by the spell of the material energy, however, persons who could not understand that Advaita Prabhu is non-different from Vishnu wanted to follow him with their impersonal conceptions. The attempt of Advaita Prabhu to punish them is also auspicious. Lord Vishnu and his activities can bestow all good fortune directly and indirectly. In other words, being favored by Lord Vishnu and being punished by Lord Vishnu are one and the same because all the activities of Vishnu are absolute. According to some, Mangala was another name of Advaita Prabhu. As the causal incarnation or Lord Vishnu's incarnation for a particular occasion, he is the supply agent or ingredient in material nature. However, he is never to be considered material. All his activities are spiritual. Anyone who hears about and glorifies him becomes glorified himself. For such activities, free from all kinds of misfortune, one should not invest any material contamination or impersonalism in the Vishnu form. Everyone should try to understand the real identity of Lord Vishnu. For such knowledge, one can attain the highest stage of perfection. So there's another couple of verses in the Adi Lila, Volume 2, that discuss this principle a little further. The Prabhupada talks about this a little bit more so that we can understand the nature of Advaita Acharya. It says in Adi Lila, chapter 7, text 13, Sri Advaita Acharya is Lord Chaitanya's incarnation as a devotee. Therefore, these three tattvas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, and Advaita Goswami, are the predominators or masters. In other words, these are all Vishnu tattvas. These are all expansions. Of course, Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself. So he's not an expansion of anybody, but Nityananda, his brother, Lord Balaram, and Sri Adwaita, who is a double expansion of Mahavishnu and Sudashiva. Sudashiva is the Lord Shiva, I believe, who resides in Goloka. So he's a double expansion of Vishnu and Lord Shiva, and therefore he's Vishnu Tattva. He is the primal energy of the Lord, the causal energy of the Lord, not the external energy of the Lord. Then, on the other hand, it's explained, or not on the other hand, but in a little more detail, it says the three predominators, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, and Adwaita Prabhu, are worshipable by all living entities. And the fourth principle, Sri Gadadhar Prabhu, is to be understood as their worshiper. So it's not only Gadadhar, but Srinivas also. And the Panchatantra, they've all come, the five Panchatantra, and of course we worship Adwaita Acharya as one of the Panchatattva, as well as in his own right, are all on an equal platform, because they, even though three of them are Vishnu Tattva, are predominators, and two of them are the external Tattvas, or the devotee Tattvas, so to speak, they worship the other three, or they come in that mode of devotees. They've all come in the mode of devotees. They're all appearing as devotees of Krishna. Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, Sri Adwaita, Gadadhar, and Srivas have all appeared as devotees of the Lord, even though in technical terms the three are Vishnu Tattvas, while the other two are in the other category of the worshipers of Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. So Adwaita appeared. He appeared in 1483 A.D. He was born in Srihatta, although some people claim that he was born in Shantipur. There seems to be a little bit of academic differences of opinion there. He appeared 53 years before Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who appeared in 1486. He's also known by the name Kamalaksha. I don't know what that means. Does anybody know what that means? Okay. Yeah, the echo makes it hard to hear. So he's also known by that name. And later on, of course, he moved to Shantipur, and he had a house in Navadvip. And in Shantipur, he was a great scholar. He studied under many teachers. And he obtained many scholarly titles, recognition for his scholarship and his scholarly expertise. Then, of course, what Lord Adwaita really did, what his main contribution was, is he advented the whole Sankirtan movement. He is the origin or the genesis of the Krishna consciousness movement. We're all here today because of Sri Adwaita. Because at that time in Navadvip and in Mayapur and that area, West Bengal, it was like, as Prabhupada is noting in this verse, it was overrun with impersonalists and mental speculators. And the devotees were actually, even in Mayapur, were just a very, very small group of clandestine bhaktas or worshippers of Krishna. It wasn't like it is today, where if you go to Mayapur today, everybody's like Hari Bolo and Jai Lord Chaitanya and so forth and so on. And it wasn't like that 500 years ago, or at least when in the 15th century when Lord Adwaita was there, he was kind of like isolated. He was starting the first Krishna consciousness temple, so to speak. He's responsible. He was preaching. And they used to have clandestine meetings in different homes where they get together and they chant and they discuss the pastimes of Krishna and Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. And Lord Chaitanya's older brother used to go to these meetings. Can't remember his name offhand. Anybody remember? He used to go to these meetings. So it's kind of like even today, where it's not so many we're up against the impersonalists as much as we are up against the materialists. And the world is overrun with all kinds of materialism. And Prabhupada says that what Sri Adwaita did was he declared war on Maya because he's Acharya. He's a teacher of the bhakti cult. And Prabhupada says there's two types of worshippers. There's the Goshti Anandi and the Bhaja Anandi. The Goshti Anandi, he wants to make more devotees, or she wants to make more devotees. And the Bhaja Anandi, they're kind of self-fulfilled, and they just want to sit in Vrindavan and chant and find a bhajan kuti somewhere and just chant. And there, that Prabhupada said that's good, but that's not the mood. That was not Adwaita Acharya's mood, because he's Acharya. He's Adwaita because he's Vishnu Tattva. He's one with Vishnu. That's the meaning of Adwaita. And he's Acharya because his mission is to spread the bhakti cult, to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. So he was trying to preach in Bengal and Mayapur and all these places, this dutta, that dutta, this pura, that pura. And of course, the impersonalists were so prominent that he was getting very angry. He was very mad. Adwaita was very mad. So finally, he couldn't take it anymore. And he went to the bank of the Ganges with his Shalagram Shilas, and he worshipped, or he prayed to Lord Krishna by worshipping his Shilas with Ganges water and Tulsi leaves. He worshipped his Shilas. And he was praying, and he was crying very loudly. He was doing this in a very, very loud way. It wasn't like it was his quiet or silent meditation, or he was doing it in his mind, like chanting Gayatri Mantra or something. He was crying out, "Oh Lord, you must come. You have to do something about this situation," because ultimately he was seeing how these people were misleading the world. And Prabhupada refers to the impersonalists, he calls them demons. He actually refers to them as demons, even though they get impersonal liberation and they may merge with the impersonal Brahman, still they're demons because they deny the existence of God. They're atheists because they deny the existence of God. And Krishna is God, Krishna has form, and they deny that. They deny Krishna's basic essence of who Krishna is. And therefore, Prabhupada refers to them as demons. And so they were running all over the place, preaching and making all kinds of trouble. And Adwaita Acharya was going crazy, so to speak. He couldn't take it anymore. Just like Narada Muni, when all the Kamsa and all the other demons were running all over India and making all kinds of havoc, Narada Muni couldn't take it anymore, so he, you know, intervened in these different ways, the proverbial voice in the sky warning Kamsa, "Oh, your sister is going to have this child who will kill you." So that kind of set off this chain of events, the culmination of which, or the result of which, was the appearance of Krishna 5,000 years ago. So in the same way, Adwaita, Lord Adwaita, who was crying out very loudly, his cries were so loud that they were actually piercing all of the layers of the material world and going to Goloka Vrindavan itself, where Krishna heard Adwaita's prayers. He heard his chanting, his cries to please appear. And directly, not indirectly, but directly, and as in cause and effect, because of Sri Adwaita, Krishna agreed to appear. But as we all know, he did not come as the Supreme Lord. He did not come as a Krishna. He came in the mood of his devotee. He came as devotees to show people how to worship God. That's the whole point of Panchatattva. That's the whole point of Gaur Nitya, is to show people how to worship God by this Nam Sankirtan. And this is the whole mission of Sri Advaita was to initiate or to launch the Nam Sankirtan movement. And then, of course, when Lord Chaitanya appeared, then Nityananda was also there along with the other members of Panchatattva, and then the whole Sankirtan movement was on its way. And so in the same way, Bhaktivinod, the same mood of Advaita Acharya has come down in our parampara. Bhaktivinod Thakur predicted and prayed that this movement would spread all over the world. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and he prayed for a son that could actually do this, and Prabhupada refers to Bhaktisiddhanta as Gostiyanandi because his mission was to make devotees, was to make as many devotees all over the world as possible. So he's Gostiyanandi. And of course, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta gave Prabhupada the instruction to go to the West. You go to the Western countries and you preach Krishna consciousness there. And nobody was able to do this before. The farthest that any of Prabhupada's godbrothers ever got was London. And when they got there, when he got, I don't remember who it was, but when he got there, he just turned around and went back. He said, oh, this is hopeless. These people will never, ever become devotees. They're maleches, they're meat eaters. And Prabhupada, on a 1975, on Advaita's appearance day, he was giving a lecture and he was talking about this war on Maya, that the four regulative principles of no illicit sex, gambling, etc. And so Prabhupada was saying in this lecture, it was somewhat funny. He said, instead of gambling, he said, what is that game called that people play? And Prabhupada called it Congo. And some devotee said, no, bingo. And everybody laughed. And Prabhupada said, yes, the four regular principles, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no meat eating, and no bingo. So this is Prabhupada's mood was to destroy Maya, because the material world, he was talking about these billboards and how everywhere he went there was an advertisement for this and advertisement for that in the Western countries. There's no restrictions whatsoever. And there's, you go down the street, you see animals, byproducts being advertised for consumption and all kinds of things for illicit sex and gambling and so forth. So none of Prabhupada's godbrothers could deal with the power of the material energy in the Western countries. It was so overwhelming. It was so strong. And if you can imagine how strong, we see how strong Maya is. We see how strong this material energy is. Well, that's what the Mayavadis were back in the 500 years ago in West Bengal, in the place where Sri Advaita appeared. It was almost like overwhelming. It was very powerful, and they were in control of everything. And so somebody had to do something about it, so Sri Advaita did that. But Prabhupada said that we have to be in the mood of Advaita Acharya. We have to come in that mood. We have to declare war on Maya, and we can't be content to sit in the temples and be satisfied with our own sadhana. I mean, that's obviously extremely important, and one cannot be successful if he or she neglects that. But Prabhupada's mission was that we go out and we preach. That was what Prabhupada wanted us to do. And he was talking about, in that same lecture in 1975, there's a really nice part there where he says, this is pretty graphic. He's talking about the Kali Yuga and how bad it's going to get. And sometimes we think, well, you know, I just have done enough in this lifetime. I just really can't do anymore. I've gotten to this point, whatever it may be. I've spent 30, 20, 40 years of devotional service, and now I'm gonna take a break for a while and go out and enjoy myself, and I'll just pick up where I left off in my next life, and I'll finish up next time around. So, because I just can't do this anymore. There's too many beautiful women. There's too many, I want some money. I want a nice car. I want this. I want that. So I'll just finish up in the next life. I've already kind of like guaranteed I'm going to get a human birth in my next life, and I'll probably take birth in a devotee family, or maybe I'll become a demigod or something like that. I'm not going to go to hell, although one should watch out for committing offenses in the strength of the holy name. But nonetheless, Prabhupada, he really knocks this notion. He destroys it in this one lecture. He smashes it, and it's pretty graphic for the faint of heart. Really, it's pretty strong. And he says, this is Maya, and our declaration of war with Maya. No intoxication, no meeting, no bingo. These are our declaration of war. So we have to fight in that way because nobody can understand Krishna without being free from all sinful activities. These are sinful activities. Therefore, it is Acharya's business to stop these nonsense activities. Otherwise, they'll not be able to understand, especially the meat eaters. They cannot understand. Unless one is very expert in killing animals, he's not bereft from Krishna consciousness. That means that one who is very expert in killing, he cannot understand. Therefore, Christ also said, thou shalt not kill, the first business. Nobody will be able, if one is a killer of animal, small or big, ultimately killer of his own children, killer of his own self. And I actually had a recent experience with this. I have this client. He's a really nice guy. He comes to the temple a lot, likes prasadam. He used to be out at the airport from one of the groups at the airport. And so we were talking a couple weeks ago, and he was saying about 6 or 7 months ago he became a vegan. And I said, wow, that's pretty good. And I was going to immediately launch into, because he's a Christian also, and I was going to say, well, Christ said, because whenever somebody would bring up the Christians or Christian philosophy or Jesus Christ to Prabhupada, Prabhupada would immediately jump on them and say, Christ said, thou shalt not kill. So why are you killing? That's the first thing he would say, the first commandment or whatever, the first or second commandment. Thou shalt not kill. So why are you killing? And Christ did not say, don't kill only human beings. Where does he say that? That means only human beings. It means everyone, every living entity, don't kill. So Prabhupada used to make this point very strongly. And here he's saying without stopping animal slaughter, one cannot make even begin to understand. So in the case of Harold's case, I was about to mention, start preaching in a certain way about thou shalt not kill. And he immediately, before I could get the words out of my mouth, he said, yeah, the first commandment is thou shalt not kill. And it doesn't just mean animals. I mean, it doesn't just mean humans. It means animals also. So just by stopping meat eating, he had already begun to understand higher concepts. And I was just really amazed. I said, wow, this is really amazing that once they stop eating meat, then they can understand thou shalt not kill and the real meaning of that, because the animals do have a soul. That's the whole misconception, is that the animals have no soul. Therefore, we can eat them. Or we can dominate them and exploit them for fur and skin and so many horrible things. And Prabhupada says they put the slaughterhouses in very secret places away from the cities. Or they isolate them and put thick walls so people can't really see what's going on. And sometimes these animal rights groups, they sneak in and they take these undercover footage of how the animals are slaughtered and what's done to them after they're slaughtered. And it's just, nobody can watch it. Nobody can watch this stuff. It's so terrible. I remember there was one prophet in the first canto talks about, he was very upset. in the first canto in the story of Mars Pericet, Prabhupada was very upset when he's talking about animal slaughter and what they do to the cow and the bull. He's very upset. You can feel it in his purports how upset he is and how mad he is. And he says they take the cow, the calf, away from the cow at a very tender age. And then he says, for purposes that we cannot mention in these pages of Bhagavatam. Prabhupada would not even write about it. He would not even describe in the pages of the sacred Srimad Bhagavatam why they take the calf away from the cow. And we know why. They take the cow, the calf away and take them to these horrible factories or whatever they are, and they never see the light of day so that they can produce veal, which is considered to be the summum bonum of meat eating is veal, the tender veal of the calf. So how much more sinful can it actually become? How much more sinful can this society become when calves are being taken away from their mothers for this purpose? And then the mother, the cow, cries and laments. So when Mars Pariksit saw this, he was furious. He was so angry at Kali, personality of Kali, he was going to kill him. He was going to kill him. Because that's the penalty for killing a cow or an animal. Just like if you kill a human being, to understand that the soul is present in every living entity and we have no right to exceed our quota. Ishavasham idam sarvam. We all have our quota. It's been set aside for us. Then the punishment is death. Punishment is death. Of course, nowadays that's a little impractical. Can't quite do that. But so when Prabhupada's talking here about eating meat, he's not just reciting a regulative principle. This principle has very, very serious repercussions. And it's our duty to stop it. To be very honest about it, we have to stop it somehow. We can't just sit around and do nothing about this. Our goal is not to become vegetarians or to become animal rights activists, but we do have a mission. We do have to stop this animal slaughter, first and foremost. We have to do this by distributing as many books as possible and preaching as much as possible and trying to explain to people why this is such a terrible thing of slaughtering all these animals. And there's more and more people. They're out there. We have to mobilize them somehow. But anyway, that's not even the end of it. It's just the animals and the cows. That's not even the end of it. The prophet says the killing process is so... where's my place? The killing process is so nice that it goes up to the point of killing one's children. That is now happening. Killing business has so expanded that they are killing their own children. Just see the influence of Kali Yuga. The children, they take shelter of the father and mother, thinking very safe. Now in this Kali Yuga, even there is no safety under the care of father and mother. Just see how this material civilization is progressing. Very, very dangerous. Therefore, the Bhagavat verse is here. And then there's a long Sanskrit quote. And very, very abominable condition in this age of Kali. Very, very. It is the beginning of Kali. Now we have to pass through 427,000 of years. Kali Yuga will make progress in that way. And people are now practicing eating their children. And at the end of Kali, there will be no food available. They'll have to eat children just like the snakes do. The snake eat their own children. There are many animals, they eat their own children. So don't try to repeat your birth again and again in this Kali Yuga. It will not be a very happy life. Better sacrifice everything in this life and be fully Krishna conscious and go back to home, back to Godhead. Don't wait for the next life. This is very seriously repeated that this life I shall finish my Krishna consciousness business. And it is stated in Bhagavad Gita that Krishna consciousness business means to understand Krishna rightly and he's explaining himself rightly. Where's the difficulty to finish the Krishna consciousness business? If Krishna is explaining himself, what he is, then where is your difficulty? Krishna is explaining himself in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is sending his representative Acharya to teach you, and Krishna is within you trying to teach you if you are actually serious. Then where is the difficulty? Inside, outside, always. Books, knowledge, he is prepared. So this is actually a quote from a lecture that Prabhupada gave on Sri Advaita's appearance day. And this is what he's talking about. And that's the whole meaning of Acharya, is that we have to go out and spread the bhakti yoga mission, the bhakti cult, as Prabhupada refers to it, and stop these horrible things that are going on. It's not that we are content just to come and see as beautiful and gorgeous as the deities are, and they're beautiful and gorgeous, and here's God, there's no question about it, and we need his association and darshan. Prabhupada was more pleased by those who went out into the wilderness, into the frontier, and spread his mission by distributing books and preaching. So Kali Yuga is already getting much, much worse. It's really, there's one other thing that I'll read from the eighth canto where Prabhupada, a purport, I can find it. Oh, yeah. In the story of Lord Vamanadeva and Bali Maharaj, Prabhupada writes that when one is puffed up by the false prestige of possessing material opulence, he certainly neglects the goal of self-realization. This is the position of the modern world. Because of so-called scientific improvements in material opulence, people have entirely given up the path of self-realization. Practically no one is interested in God, one's relationship with God, or how one should act. Modern men have altogether forgotten such questions because they are mad for material possessions. If this kind of civilization continues, the time will soon come when the Supreme Personality of Godhead will take away all this material opulence. Then people will come to their senses. So a bunch of people got hurt by a meteor shower yesterday, and an asteroid passed by 17,000 miles away. So all of this planet is floating. All of these planets are floating in a very, very delicate arrangement. Just like a satellite. If these satellites and these space objects, if you tamper with the engineering, even one little millimeter or centimeter, then the thing will go out of orbit. So in the modern day, they just keep pumping oil out of the planet. They keep emitting all of these gases into the atmosphere with global warming and all this other stuff. And so now, I don't know what the significance is, but Russia got hit with a bunch of meteors. It injured about 1,000 people yesterday. A meteor shower fell to Earth in the middle of Russia and injured about 1,000 people. So now all the scientists are, you know, all of these, making all these plans of how to protect Earth from a meteor attack or an asteroid, which also happened yesterday. Two things happened the same day, the meteors and the asteroids. Now, I don't know if meteors are auspicious. I've heard that thing, if you see a comet, that's inauspicious and stuff like that. What comet is just a meteor flaming out in the sky, so maybe there's some symbolic meaning to it all. But even without that, and you know, the interesting point is how the scientists are all being interviewed, and now they're coming up with contingency plans. Not only do we have to worry about earthquakes and hurricanes and tornadoes and fires and floods and tsunamis, but now we got to watch out for meteors and asteroids. Just add it to the list. And the thing is that, everybody knows that in one instance, Christians can just wipe it all out. I mean, what does it take? I mean, look what happened to Thailand with one little vibration in the ocean and the whole country, hundreds of thousands. People don't understand because only in the Western countries, when something happens in the Western countries, because we have so much opulence and the people here have such a high standard of living and so much technology and so many material possessions, life seems to have a higher value here. And when life is lost in third world countries, nobody really notices. Nobody in Africa or Asia or some places like that, people don't. Oh, that's terrible. And then they just go about it. But when something happens in America, you know, it's like headlines all over the world because Americans are, of course, are just better, you know, the beautiful people, the most opulent people on earth. So when something happens here, of course, it makes headlines all over the world. But a tsunami could hit any minute. Krishna could just wipe it all out. Just wipe it all out. At any second, something could happen. So the whole idea is that on this beginning of the Sankirtan season, so to speak, we have to remember this. And Dvaitacharya was not playing around. He was deadly serious, literally deadly serious. And he beckoned Lord Chaitanya, please come. You have to come because the situation has become unbearable. You have to come and save them. And Prabhupada said that also after he saw. Here's the difference. When he saw the material energy, when he got off the ship in Boston and he went for a walk, he just became more determined because he was empowered by the instructions of his spiritual master. That's what his power was. And whenever somebody would ask Prabhupada, well, are you trying to do this? Are you trying to do that? Do you want many followers? You know, are you here to convert other religions to your religion? Prabhupada said, no, I am only here to, because my spiritual master told me to do this. That was his power. That was his strength of his guru, of Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. And that is why he was able to come into the belly of the beast, come walk into the teeth of the tiger, so to speak, and do everything that he did. And it's still manifesting. Like the ripples, when you throw the rock in the lake, the ripples keep going. So it's still going on. You know, even after so many years, Prabhupada's not physically present. It's still going on. And it's going to continue and continue and continue. So we can either be part of it or we can sit on the sidelines, watch everybody else have all the fun. All right, so somebody say something. Somebody say something about Dvaitacharya.
Thank you, Prabhupada, for an excellent class. I have a question. There's a graphic in the Dhamma meeting. There's a graphic picture in the Bhagavad Gita where an animal body is killing a human animal body in the future. My question is, do you believe that in the future the animals will have human bodies to kill the humans with animal bodies, or are we all sitting in the future now?
Well, all I can say is that if we don't become Krishna conscious, then we are going to have animal bodies in the future, and we will be killing anybody that we can eat, because that's food for the animals. So I think what that picture, I'm not immediately familiar with it, is that if we're not careful, if we don't take Krishna consciousness seriously, then we could slide back into the lower species of life. It's not that because we have a human form of life now that we're guaranteed a human form of life in the future. So we could slide back into the lower species of life. And Prabhupada says, if you like eating meat, then you can come back as a tiger or a lion or some other carnivore and eat raw animals, you know, fresh off the hunt. So I think that's what that's referring to. But for those of you who want to do more reading today or studying today, there's the Adi Leela, chapter 6. From text number 1 all the way to text number 111 are all about the different features of Advaita Acharya. So this season is here, and let's take advantage. Thank you very much.
Thank you.